At Cool Air Products, we developed AC Smart Seal Quick Shot with professionals in mind. It's the only product on the market that's 3-in-1, with sealant, lubricant, and UV dye all in a single application. It's non-toxic, non-flammable, 100% safe to the touch, eco-friendly, and compatible with all refrigerants. It's a safe solution option, backed by years of R&D, Intertech tested, and has sealed millions of leaks. AC Smart Seal, the professional's choice.
What's up, HVAC people, refrigeration people? So if you like open-ended, just kind of organic conversations about the trade, you're really going to like this episode because it's about refrigerants, A2Ls, flammable refrigerants, A3s, like propane base, and just the amount of refrigerants that are out there. And we have this kind of just natural progressive conversation on our thoughts and ideas around them and how many are out there. And we got Jamie Kitchen back from Danfoss. And if you heard the subcooling podcast a couple of weeks ago and you enjoyed that one, you'll enjoy this one too. And we also have his colleague, Jörg Saar from Danfoss as well. And he joins us from, I believe he was in France when we talked to him. So he joined us all the way from Europe for this conversation. So I think you guys will like this one. Let's get to it. This is the HVAC Know It All podcast. I'm your host, Gary McCready. This podcast is sponsored by Cintas. And one of the things that I hate about the middle of the summer is you start seeing ads and stuff for fall about getting ready for back to school and all that. But I mean, it is what it is, right? And it's the same thing here. As HVAC techs, we have to think about in the future, a couple months from now, depending on where you live, you might need hoodies, you might need vests, you might need some lightweight jackets and stuff like that. So if you guys are in the market to outfit your team with some blue collar uniforms, check out cintas.com/HVAC Know It All. This podcast is sponsored by Master, and something that HVAC Know It All and Master are going to partner on in the near future, very near future, is a question and answer for apprentices. So apprentices, watch out for this. I'm going to be posting basically a link to a PDF. You're going to ask your question. We're going to review all the questions and I'm going to answer as many as I can or once a week or something like that on social media. So we get the answers we need to the questions that are asked. So look for that coming from myself and Master, and check out master.ca.
Welcome to the HVAC Know It All podcast. Recorded from a basement somewhere in Toronto, Canada. Your host and HVAC tech, Gary McCready, will take you on a deep dive into the industry, discussing all things HVAC. From storytelling to technical discussion. Enjoy the show.
All right, gentlemen. I mean, this conversation has been quite hard to get going just because of the technical difficulties, but we're here now and we're going to talk refrigerant. And just some of the changes that are happening. And I mean, I'm not fully aware of all of them. And that's why you guys are here to help me out with that. Because as a technician in the field, I want to stay informed and stay up to date. And I want to help the audience that's listening to this also stay informed and up to date. And I mean, this conversation kind of started with myself and Jamie in the back of my van, just demoing brazing up a valve, TU valve, stainless steel, and Jamie's just looking at all my cylinders, and we're just talking about the amount of refrigerants we got to carry these days. And it's quite, if you do a large variety of work, if you're into refrigeration, if you're into air conditioning, if you do process, if you're one of those mechanical companies that do a bunch of different things, you could have 5-6 different refrigerants in your van at any given time. I mean, I have been burnt many times by, okay, I don't need these refrigerants, and I put them back in the shop. And then I'll do a call the next day, and I'll need like 134A or 407C, and I'll go, oh, man, I got to go drive back to the shop and get it now. So it's one of those things. Like, Jamie, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on the amount of refrigerants that are sort of out there to choose from these days? I know manufacturers will choose what goes in the system from the get-go, but there's drop-ins, there's retrofits and stuff like that, especially for R22, right? So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it's cyclical. I know York can probably add to this afterwards, because Europe's kind of ahead of us in some ways. But you hit the nail on the head. It's not so much from a manufacturer. Like, say, for example, you sell a condenser unit, you sell a compressor, you sell a TXV. Really what you're focused on is the refrigerants that are coming up, that are going to be, you know, you're gambling on anyways, are going to be widespread down the road. What we can't plan on is all the drop-ins, because they can come fast and furious, and you can have, well, just remember back, you know, for those old enough, when R12 and 502 and all of these chlorine-based refrigerants were rapidly phased out. R22 is a bit of a different story. It's been dying a slow death now for decades, but you had all these drop-ins, like you had, you know, MP39, HP81, you had Hotshot, you had all these different refrigerants, and people would come to us as a manufacturer and they'd say, hey, can we use this? And we really couldn't say yay or nay, right? All you can say is that if you use it and it doesn't cause any problems, we're okay with that, because we can't go and test every single refrigerant that's out there, because some of these might only last months, right? If nobody adopts them. Mm-hmm. And then you have others that last forever. And I think you're going to start to see a decline in some of these alternative refrigerants just as the main refrigerants disappear. So as a manufacturer and myself who follow the industry, still I have people mention new refrigerants to me. I've never heard of them before. And when I say new refrigerants, I'm not talking about, you know, something that's being manufactured that is going to be used in, you know, 40% of the equipment that's going out there. I'm talking about a drop-in replacement that somebody has come up. You don't see as many anymore coming out that's new, at least from my experience. Others may have different mileage, but the funny thing is that it's not as regulated, I think, as what we think it is. I mean, R22, I can remember drop-in R22s that sounded fantastic on paper, until you found out they were 80% propane. Now, the fact that it's propane isn't as big a deal as that the units weren't labeled. So a technician coming to a unit, there was no warnings on it. There was nothing saying, hey, you know, this has got some flammable stuff in it. So you're talking a large system charge, you know, with a 4 or 5 ton, you know, AC system. You go, you pull the refrigerant out of it, there's still some residual pressure in it. You know, I had a technician tell me he put a torch on it to pull it apart, and suddenly it let go and there was this massive flame. He almost had to go home and change his pants. It scared him so bad, right? So the fact is that without a lot of these regulations and protections and playing catch up, my biggest concern is that if there's a flammable nature to them and they're not labeled, then that can be a problem. We're not seeing nearly as much of that nowadays. That mm-hmm. is kind of a, you know, from my concern anyways, is a thing of the past.
Yeah.
So, but Gary, how do you tell what refrigerant's in a system if you don't know? I mean, you go there and you assume that what's in there is what it says on the label. But if somebody's replaced it, you don't really have any tools that you can use to say, hey, this has got something completely different in it. Do you?
Yeah.
You go by pressure, temperature, saturation points, things like that?
Good point. Well, I mean, the refrigerants that I'm using as a drop-in for R22, for example, mm-hmm. they come with a little envelope inside the handle of the tank. Mm-hmm. And in that envelope is like instructions, there is information, there is a PT chart, and there's little labels. So you can put a label on the unit. You can mm-hmm. put the amount you've charged, the kind of refrigerant, like the type it is, the type mm-hmm. of oil that's in the system, and you got to use a Sharpie or something that stays permanent. And hopefully the technicians that are doing this are labeling the equipment, because if they're not labeling it, like let's say it is an R22 unit and someone has done a retrofit of it and they put a drop in. And just so everybody's listening, I get this question all the time about drop-ins. Is a drop-in something you can just add on top of your R22? No, it's not. You have to remove all the refrigerant, and then you have to pull a vacuum, and then you have to charge freshly. So let's just make that clear. Now, sorry, I lost my train of thought there. What was I saying there, James?
Oh, you were talking about, you know, once you install a new refrigerant, it's not something you can just top up the old refrigerant with.
Take it out of the system. Yeah, that's what I was saying. Before that, I was labeling the mm-hmm. refrigerant. And then if somebody goes there, yeah, that's what I was about to say. If somebody goes there and there's R22 still in the system, right? And maybe it's a leak on a packing or something. They don't have to mm-hmm. open the system to fix it. They fix the packing and they look at it and goes, yeah, it's R22. They bring their jug of R22 up and they go to fill it up, right? And now you're adding a refrigerant on top of a refrigerant, and mm-hmm. who knows what's going to happen now. So labeling is super important. I mean, here in Canada, we need to, it's kind of law that we put these refrigerant tags on a system mm-hmm. to show how much, what kind, this, that, and the other. So Jorg, let's come to you. Things are different. You're over across the pond. You're not in North America. You're in Europe, and Europe seems to be a little bit more advanced when it comes to refrigerant changes, and you guys are doing them way sooner than we are over here in North America. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, as mentioned by you and Jamie, yes, you have to carry quite some cylinders with different refrigerants nowadays, because you have all these systems which are in the field and you need to repair them. And then you have maybe drop-ins or whatever, and then you have the new systems with the new refrigerants. So at the moment, it's not possible to carry only two or three different refrigerants. You cannot live with that. You need more than that. However, that number seems to be going down over time, because old systems get out of the market and you don't need anything for these systems anymore. A good example is R22. R22 systems in Europe, if they run, you can keep them running. But if you need to do a service on these systems, they are dead by definition. That's it, right? You cannot replace the R22 refrigerant with anything. For sure not with other R22. You take the system out of service, because any system in Europe that still contains R22 is at least 23 years old now, at least. So you would never go to somebody and say, okay, I'm going to repair that system, a 23-year-old system. You don't change a compressor. That makes no sense. Right? You take it out of service, you build a new one.
Well, let me ask you this. What if it's something, so this is going back about a month. I worked on it was a McQuay unit. It was manufactured by McQuay many, many years ago. I don't know how old it is, but it's 100 tons, right? And it was an R22 charge unit, and it had a leak. It all leaked out, and I had to use a drop-in replacement. So let's say in Europe there's a system that big that has R22 in it, and it leaks out. There's no course of action to repair it until we can get a replacement sort of scheduled up and quoted and all that kind of stuff, or it's just dead at that point.
It's that you don't get R22 anymore. You cannot charge R22. Anymore.
No drop-in refrigerants as an alternative?
Well, then that refrigerant would need to be something that does not contain any chlorine. And maybe there is an option for that, but again, the system is pretty old. So you would try to look at something else. And these big systems, you probably have tried to take them out of service before already and replace them with something else, because there is this risk that you have such a big system still running on R22 that it's going to fail, and then you sit there without a refrigeration system.
So Jamie, you're pretty well versed in the thermal expansion valve. I mean, that's pretty mm-hmm. obvious. We've done superheat, we've done subcooling podcasts, and when Danfoss is manufacturing these TX valves, what refrigerants are you seeing kind of stamped on them or stickered on them these days? Because I mean, that's kind of my go-to. If the nameplate is gone on the condensing unit or the outdoor unit, or I go to the TX valve and mm-hmm. I look at it to see what kind of refrigerant we're using in that system. Sometimes there's a couple of different ones on there, and then you're still kind of guessing. But as far as you're concerned, what are the major refrigerants that you're seeing on these TX valves being designed for?
Yeah, so for direct expansion systems, there's a couple of options. I deal a lot on the service side, so we're a lot of times dealing with equipment that's already been installed.
Gotcha.
Or, okay. You know, it's in medium temp refrigeration or whatever it happens to be. So a lot of the newer refrigerants, you're starting to see, you know, 448, 449, the 4-5 series, 513, which is kind of like, you know, the equivalent of, you know, R134A. And generally, it's a lot of refrigerant that's focused on replacing 404. R32 and these other flammable refrigerants for 410A are coming down the pipe. But to be honest with you, it's kind of a slow go as far as I'm concerned, because the real change is occurring with the big manufacturers. So, you know, we have a team, you know, that sell to the big four, the global air conditioning guys, you know, Carrier, York, Trane, whatever they happen to be, who are global. They kind of set the stage, they kind of set the precedence, and then, you know, they have a lot of research going on. And because whatever they put out there is going to probably go into 60 or 70% of the systems, you know, out there. So from that standpoint, whatever, I can't really give out any particular refrigerants, but from what I understand, R32 is going to definitely be one that we're looking at as far as 410A goes. It's, you know, mildly flammable. It's got some hydrocarbon in it, but essentially it has good efficiency, and it actually operates, from what I understand, slightly higher pressures than our 410A does. Nice. But as far as refrigeration goes for the short term, you know, the 419, 418 Bs, those are the kind of the ones that you see mostly right now coming out for refrigeration systems.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as flammable refrigerants, R290s like propane, who was it?
Yeah.
It was you. It was, I'm sure it was one of you guys the last time we chatted, talking about how refrigerant leaks out of a domestic refrigerator. Yes. And how they've changed the design. Which one of you guys was that?
That was me.
That was you. Can you maybe, because I've seen videos, and I think other people have seen videos, maybe somewhere in the world where a refrigerator has exploded, and you told me that how they've changed the design, right?
Yeah.
You want to just bring that up for a minute?
Okay, so you've heard us talking about WiseHire. So basically, you can post a high quality job ad in about 2 minutes, and you can customize it, or you can use an expert approved template that they've created for you. So it sounds like it's fast. It sounds like we've got templates we can throw up, or you can customize it depending on how you like to roll your job ads out. So if you're looking for some people, talent or potential, as we've identified the difference between the two, check out WiseHire. So I've carried this Yellow Jacket core removal tool in my pouch for a couple of years now. And this one is a bit special because it actually has a torque setting built into it. So it's got like a silver handle on the core tool. And basically, as you're tightening the core tool back in place, it breaks and it stops tightening to the correct amount of torque. It's called the Yellow Jacket Real Torque core removal tool. So if you're looking for a core removal tool to change live cores out, use it in an evacuation process where you're removing cores so you have that restriction out of the way, check it out, because it's going to torque your Schrader core back in to the torque setting recommended by the manufacturer. So I've been using Chirp now for about a month and a half or so, and it's an automated process to keep in touch with your customers. And there's many stats out there that revolve around closing business deals. And if you don't follow up, your close rate drops off dramatically. Following up, your close rate rises dramatically because you're following up and keeping in touch with your customer. So Chirp allows you to do this in an automated fashion. If you're busy, you don't have time to keep up with all the follow-ups, right? So it links up with your favorite CRM tools, Jobber, Housecall Pro, ServiceTitan. Texting, email, and ringless voicemail is how it's going to stay in touch with your customers. So guys, if you want to try it out, check out Chirp, chirp.com.
Everybody's, you know, worst nightmare is, you know, somebody gets a putty knife out to clean the ice off the inside of the freezer of their refrigerator at home, and they, you know, they poke a hole in that really soft aluminum evaporator and all your refrigerant leaks out, and people think it's going to be a Hollywood movie and your entire house is going to blow up. Meanwhile, they have natural gas in the house and a propane barbecue. But where they're designed is, if you look at a small domestic fridge, right, that has a flammable refrigerant in it, what you want and what is the system charge weight is designed for is to leak out into an open space. And I'll let Jorg get in on this too. And so what you're looking for is a lack of ignition, but more importantly, you are avoiding what we call the combustion triangle. And that means you're avoiding a situation where the percentage of the fuel, which is the propane, and air mixes in a concentration that allows it to ignite. So in the case of small charge systems, you know, where it's up to 150 grams or 300 grams or whatever we're at now in the larger commercial ones, they can only be used in a space large enough where if it leaks, it will be so diluted that you will never ever reach that point where it can combust. So you want it to leak outside of the unit. The most dangerous situation is where it leaks inside of the unit, and now you're in an enclosed space, right, with air and fuel. And if it ignites, then you're going to have an issue. So they place it so the evaporators, everything else is going to have refrigerant. If the worst case scenario happens and you get a leak, it's going to leak outside of the unit. And so that's why when they say, you know, when you're servicing these units, make sure you have ventilation, make sure that it's out in an open area, there's air movement, all these different things. Now, you may say, ask, well, how do they know that the space it's going to be used in is not going to be, it's too small or whatever? Well, they go by capacity. In other words, there's regulations that state if your equipment is this big and it has this charge, it must have this much space around it. And they know that given certain capacities, they're used in areas that are of a certain size, you know, on average. And there's all these, same as the insurance company, there's all these studies that are done. So the point is that the vast, vast majority of the time, these units are being used in spaces where even if all the refrigerant leaked out at once, 100%, your chance of having a mixture that's explodable or flammable is very low. The second thing is there's no ignition sources now. The thermostats that they use in these are all enclosed with a safety cover so that if they do ignite the refrigerant, believe it or not, that flame front, as we call it, is contained within a closed environment. It's like a safety lamp that's used by the miners back in the day where they go into the mines and there was coal dust everywhere. They had a mesh on it where if your open flame lamp or whatever lit some coal dust, that flame would never travel past the lamp. Same kind of concept today. So we have tested these thermostats in a flammable environment thousands of times and never has the flame front ever progressed past the thermostat. So there's different ways of doing it. But remember, 100%, the refrigerant has to never be inside of the unit. It can't leak inside of the unit. It has to leak outside. Jörg, what are your thoughts?
Well, exactly what you said. If you open up an old refrigerator, then you see these thin aluminum evaporators there. Mm-hmm. Take a new refrigerator nowadays, you don't see the evaporator anymore. Mm-hmm. Because it's a complete, the inner part is one closed plastic housing. Only the part where the door is, of course, that's open. You want to get some stuff into the refrigerator and out. But everything else is one closed housing, and your evaporator is behind that plastic. So even if you fiddle around with a knife there, you would need to cut through a thicker piece of plastic, and only behind that you would reach your evaporator. And then if you puncture your evaporator, what you said happens, the refrigerant leaks out and stays out of that plastic housing. Mm-hmm. So it's not inside the refrigerator. That's a design change of the refrigerators you have seen.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing comes for commercial systems. Cabinets or these bottle coolers, glass door bottle coolers and so on. There are pretty strict regulations which say if you have propane, for example, there, and you want to reach a certain charge, this is how you have to build that system.
Mm-hmm.
Either you comply or you don't fill that mm-hmm. much. That's just how it works.
Yeah.
So what do you think? I mean, I haven't seen a whole, I'm going to put this to you, Jörg. I haven't seen a whole ton of training available for, I mean, it's out there. I know it is, but it's not in my face. You know what I mean? I've seen training for compressor, different types of compressors, different types of valves, different parts of the industry. But I haven't seen enough training come through my feeds that are kind of educating on flammable refrigerants and A2Ls. How important do you think training is before we step in to working on some of these newer refrigerants that have flammability, Jörg?
First level, without training, don't touch that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's my approach. So you have to have that training to make you aware of what you're doing. So you have to have that mindset, that awareness that you work with a flammable refrigerant. And that mindset, that awareness needs to be there to avoid any dangerous I don't care situation, mm-hmm. and to avoid a situation that you are fearful and say, I don't know what to do, so I do nothing. That makes no sense either, right? You need to have a risk awareness there, and then you can have a safe work environment with flammable refrigerants. Mm-hmm. To make it short, you have to have a training. And for European regulations, for example, they say you have to have a training to work with that. You cannot work with them without a proper training.
What about tools? Because I mean, they're starting to make like Yellow Jacket, NAVAC, all the big players in the recovery evacuation type game. They're making tools that are intrinsically safe, basically sealing the on off switch and stuff, just so we can't create sparks. So tools, I mean, tools are important. Also, like Jamie said, airflow. Purging with nitrogen while you braise, just in case there's any flammable vapor left within the system as you're braising or something like that, so it's not coming out of the pipe and creating a little bit of a flame around you and creating issues. I mean, with the A2Ls, there's a lot of people on the fence. I would say that some people say it's really not that bad if you just follow some safety procedures, and some people actually think that it can be a bit of a situation if you're brazing up, if you're using A2Ls and you're not cautious. I mean, as far as the tools go, the tools are there. I mean, it's an expense for the contractor to buy these tools now, but it is what it is. I mean, the industry is changing, and that's always been the way. We always have to be updating and upgrading our tools. But as far as, I'll throw this to you, Jörg, then I'll throw it to Jamie. As far as the A2Ls and being on the fence, what is your thoughts on A2Ls? Are they really that flammable, or is it something to be not as concerned about as people are making it out to be?
Well, to make it very clear, they are flammable.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
So we need to have in mind those are flammable refrigerants. However, there is a major difference between A2L and A3.
Yeah.
To say there is a major difference between working with R32, for example, or R454A, R454C, R455A, whatever, and propane. That's a major, major mm-hmm. difference. Mm-hmm. Many of your tools can be reused for A2L refrigerants. You have to follow certain procedures, but many of your tools can be used even for A2L. That's not the case mm-hmm. for A3, for propane refrigerants. And the reason why that is not the case is that you need a lot of energy to ignite an A2L refrigerant. And you need just a little tiny bit to ignite propane. So propane, you wear something that generates a spark, because you wear material, a kind of plastic material, whatever, that you have electrostatic energy, and then you touch a piece of metal and you feel that spark on your fingertip. That spark is sufficient to ignite propane. Mm-hmm. That spark is by far not sufficient to ignite an A2L refrigerant. You need a torch mm-hmm. to ignite that. That's the difference. And you have to have that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Jamie, what do you think? Maybe setting up some fans, getting airflow around the machine, purging nitrogen before you take a torch to A2Ls or propane.
I mean, if you look at the programs that organizations like, you know, RSES, Refrigeration Service Engineers, and that have set up, about, you know, 85 or 90% of the training on flammable refrigerants is just normal best practices. You know, and you mentioned that, you know, you purge with nitrogen. Well, you purge with nitrogen before you braise for multiple reasons.
Yeah,
dry exactly. the system yeah. to make sure there's no oxidation, you know, that black crud. you know, all of these things are being done. With normal refrigerants, you want ventilation anyways, right? Because both hydrocarbons and refrigerants are both suffocants, right? Yeah. So, you know, you want proper ventilation. The thing is that what you don't want when you're using, as York said, you don't want an open flame. So you don't just pull, you know, recover the refrigerant or, you know, bleed it out until you're at, you know, room pressure or whatever, say R290. And then throw a torch on there, because again, you've got a flammable material that's inside. So you purge it with nitrogen. You make sure you have some kind of ventilation, either a window open, or you're fitting a large space, whatever it happens to be. Then you're going to be okay, you know, from that standpoint. Because keep in mind, nobody is servicing these under the counter refrigerators and freezers that you see, that you can go out and buy from Home Depot or wherever they happen to be, because they're a couple hundred bucks, you know. You're not going to call somebody in half the time to service these things. So that's really, you know, a large part of these are kind of not going to be seen by technicians anyways. When you get into commercial size equipment, it's a little bit different story. The charges are a little bit higher, but again, they're being used in an environment where it should be relatively easy to set a fan up and get some cross flow air going. Proper ventilation. You're going to recover the refrigerant or, you know, whatever you need. Believe it or not, in some places you can actually vent the hydrocarbon R290. Okay.
That's been discussed too. A lot of people will just drag the thing to the outside and just punch a hole in it.
Well,
and just,
you know, there's videos being put on by manufacturers that show people doing exactly that.
Yeah.
And you're hoping that there's nobody down below on the floor below having a cigarette or cigar or something like that, right? You know, and this stuff land on their head. But as long as it's mixed and diluted, there's no danger. And once you get that out of the system, then you purge with nitrogen, the danger's gone, right? It's not like this is a large system where there's solenoid valves, ball valves, whatever, where you could isolate a large part of the system and say, oh man, there was this, you know, heat reclaim valve that I didn't manage to get the refrigerant out of, and it's a dangerous situation. These are small systems, right? So once you pull the refrigerant out of it, and you purge it with nitrogen and whatnot, then you just follow the rules. And number one is people don't generally use torches on these systems anymore. You use a pipe cutter and you use the new tubing connectors that are solderless, non-flammable, right? So you put them in, you crimp it on, and away you go. See, there's really no open flame involved in these. To me, the bigger danger comes from, as I said before, the old drop-ins that were sold en masse that were largely propane, and they were put in large split systems with nobody knowing about them. That to me is more dangerous than working on a system that's labeled. You're going in there with full knowledge, knowing that it's flammable, and you follow the proper precautions. And as York says, there's training available on that.
Yeah.
You know, 90% of it is best practices, but there are other things that tell you, like ventilation and that are highlighted. Don't use open flame on it if possible until you've completely, you know, pulled all the refrigerant out of it and purged with nitrogen. To me, it's straightforward from that standpoint. Once you've taken those steps, there is no danger left.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to mention one point regarding the ventilation, just as an example for the training. When you hear it, all of a sudden it becomes clear and you don't forget it anymore. But you can do two things to have ventilation. You set your fan up. Now there is a possibility you work here, you put the fan beside you, and the fan sucks the air out from your working area. That's one option. That's not what you are going to do when you have flammable refrigerants.
Mm-hmm.
You put the fan on the other side, and that fan blows fresh air into your working area, because that air will not contain any refrigerant. The air that you suck out might contain a flammable refrigerant, so your fan might ignite that mixture. So you blow fresh air into your working area, not the other way around.
That's a really good point, York.
Small points, right? But that's the stuff you hear when you do these trainings. When you heard that, it's like, yeah, okay, clear. Understand that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's why you do a training.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, for the next few minutes here, let's talk about the next 5 to 10 years. York, what do you think is going to happen on this refrigerant I mean, all these changes, there's so many changes happening on a constant. It's always in our face. It's present. It's like in a year from now, who knows what's going to happen. So what are your predictions over the next 5 years or so? I mean, CO2 is a big one. I mean, do you see CO2 being implemented into the average air conditioner? I know we're using it in supermarket refrigeration, large systems, but do you see that like escalating to now commercial air conditioning systems, residential air conditioning systems? Do you see that whatsoever at all?
There are some ideas to bring CO2 into air conditioning systems. However, there are other solutions which mm-hmm. are probably used for air conditioning systems.
And that's why you're here. Yeah. So you get your thoughts.
And of course, it depends on when we talk about the next 5 years, it depends on the region where we are, what's going to happen in the next 5 years. Exactly. Just to look a little bit at the history in Europe. You mentioned, Jamie, as well, 448A that has been replaced by 448A, 449A. Yes, mm-hmm. correct. In Europe, new systems are no longer built with 448 or 449. There are no replacements for those. So we mm-hmm. had some years where we have built 448, 449 systems here. And that helped us to reduce the GWP, the global warming potential, by a good 50%. Mm-hmm. And now the next step has taken part. So that was kind of a temporary solution for new systems. Of course, they will stay in the market for some time, but it was kind of a temporary solution. And I see that in many areas that we have refrigerants which stay there for some years, maybe a decade or 1.5 decades, and yeah. then they are going to be replaced. Longer term, what I expect is that we see a lot of these so-called natural refrigerants. And now we can have a big debate. Is propane natural because it is made in a refinery out of crude oil and so on? But by definition, by typical usage, that natural means it's a molecule that is already in the environment mm-hmm. in big quantities, and it can be used by bacteria or whatever. They can eat that molecule. Mm-hmm. So nature can handle it. And that's hydrocarbons and ammonia, and of course air and water. So that's probably the really long-term stuff where most of the systems somehow go to, with niche applications of fluorinated refrigerants in other areas mm-hmm. where you need to somehow fulfill requirements which are difficult to fulfill with CO2 or with propane. And saying that, coming back to your air conditioning question, what's going to happen probably as well is that we have two ways. One is we have kind of smaller chillers, like a VRF system on a chiller base, and we distribute water to cool single rooms down, and then have several water generators mm-hmm. connected to one maybe central refrigeration system. That's one option. And the other one is to bring in the concept of a maximum leakage possibility. That means, let's say you have 10 kilograms of refrigerant, but you build a system in a way that in case you see a leak in a smaller room, that room is kind of cut off from the system. And you can make sure that maximum a few hundred grams leak out there before that part is cut off. And then whatever you have in the system doesn't count anymore. It counts only what the amount that can leak into that room, these few hundred grams. Mm-hmm. And that's how you can make bigger systems, even with flammable refrigerants, when you can make sure that your maximum leakage amount is reduced.
I see. So how would you, when can you kind of maybe just escalate that a little bit? Because how would we know, or would we design like the evaporator or where the heating coil or whatever it is to only leak at that rate? Or are you saying that we're going to have something that knows, like a sensor in the room, to say, hey, we're leaking, and maybe put a valve that's automated to close that part of the system off? Is that
Exactly, the second one. Yes,
the second one.
Okay. You have a sensor there that senses, oh, there's refrigerant now. Now I close those valves and cut off.
Normally close that solenoid that valve that closes when it's de-energized.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so a valve that cuts pretty fast and keeps pretty tight. And there are already specifications for these valves, for these regulations, mm-hmm. how this is done. And then you would have that sensor, and the sensor cuts off that supply to this part of the system, that evaporator. And then it doesn't matter how big your leak is.
Yeah, well, I mean, my first question seemed silly, because if you have a giant leak, you're going to leak out a lot of refrigerant. But I always ask silly questions just because I'm trying to understand your thought process. Anyway, so Jamie, we'll go to you. The next, you can go and finish off Jorg's statement, or you can tell us what you think outside of what Jorg said. Over the next 5 years, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I mean, you're already seeing a lot of rules and regulations coming in for like R32 for, you know, split systems, you know, VRF, mm-hmm. mini splits, whatever you want to call them, heat pump systems. If you look at it from a strictly thermodynamic standpoint, without getting fancy, you've got anything that you want to have efficiency. In other words, from the state that is going to absorb a lot of energy when it boils off in the evaporator, hydrocarbons has everything beat hands down, with the exception of ammonia and water, if you want to go that route. So as efficiency becomes more upfront, you're going to have this push towards a hydrocarbon content. So you got a refrigerant like R32, for example. What Jorg is talking about is very important going forward, because he's exactly right in that when you design a system right now, the way it stands, the system charge is limited by taking the smallest space that one of those, you know, coil units is in. And if all the refrigerant charge leaked into that room, would it be enough to cause an ignition situation? And that's the way they do it right now. So obviously, you know, you're not going to put a coil in a broom closet, but you may have one in a room that is substantially smaller than your other rooms, you know, for whatever reason. Well, by law, the charge limit in for that system is limited by the smallest room it's in. So there's going to have to be some solution to that for more widespread adoption for larger systems. For big systems, we're going to do what we already do today. We're going to pump water or glycol or whatever you want through a system. You don't push air through a system. It's a terrible way of cooling anything, right? So you're going to pump water. So you maintain all your refrigerant charge in one small area.
One small area, yeah.
Yeah, and you can reduce your refrigerant charge massively. For other systems where you are going to pump refrigerant, the only way to increase the size of that is to have something that's going to limit the amount of charge you lose. And the easiest way to do that is to have an automatic system that isolates that part of the system as soon as it senses a leak. And to be honest with you, we live today with carbon monoxide sensors, carbon dioxide sensors, smoke alarms, all of these things, right, are protecting us. Well, the same thing is going to be for refrigerant monitoring. They're going to put these in a place where if it leaks, it's going to detect it quickly. It's automatically going to isolate that part of the system, and away you go. So once that gets adapted, then you're going to see a larger systems come in, where you can have multiple rooms being fed by these systems, and your overall refrigerant charge might be, you know, 5 kilograms, for example, just throwing it out there, you know, and it can be used in places where rooms are half the size they would normally be. So you're going to get a lot more application. But with the use of electrification, I mean, everybody's throwing that word around nowadays. Heat pumps are going everywhere. You're going to Eastern Canada, every place that you used to see that had an oil tank on the wall, you have all of these heat pump systems going in, right? Yep. And the more efficient they can make them, the better it's going to be. And so I don't think this is going to go away. You're going to see these hydrocarbon, these heat pump split systems or whatever, they're going to become more and more and more predominant and used in larger and larger and larger cases. You know, it mm-hmm. just makes sense to me if I had to hazard a guess. He's right. You're going to see 419, 418, whatever they happen to be, are these different refrigerants. Their only stop gap, you're going to see, you know, more A2L refrigerants coming down for refrigeration and things like that. Long term, for the next 20, 25 years, I think it's all going to be A2L going forward.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to throw this out there, and I got to run in a couple of minutes, but all you guys are talking to me about these refrigerants and the flammability and rooms with sensors and valves that will close. I mean, I keep my ear to the ground in this industry quite well. Like I am on social media talking to techs and looking at the comments, and it scares me. It really scares me when it comes to these refrigerants and some of the lack of experience that a lot of technicians have, the lack of training that a lot of technicians have. And you put a system in that has flammability properties and valves and sensors that will shut things down. Man, we need to be highly trained on commissioning these systems, right? To make sure they're working properly. And then we need to come back and be testing these things like vigorously, like every 6 months, once a year, to make sure that, hey, maybe we have like a little bottle, we open it, the sensor, yep, closes down the valve, and we need to make sure they actually close. Yeah, yep. I mean, there's a lot of things that scare me about this moving forward, because I've just seen some of the work that's out there. I see the comments and the misconceptions and the lack of education and training. So hopefully we can put more training in place, right? And hopefully we can get technicians better educated and owners of companies, owner contractors. I mean, instead of going out and trying to make a quick buck off every single job and hitting a home run and charging like 90-year-old granny, like, you know what I mean? And taking her money like blindly. I mean, we need to start focusing on training a lot better than what we are with these new refrigerants coming out. And I mean, that's just my take on it.
I'll support you 100% on that. And that, yeah, training is the way to go. And a lot of times training always seems like last ditch resort. Like, you know, you've heard of the term greenwashing, you know, where you try and seem green to promote whatever you're doing. And training, I think, sometimes can be kind of put forward like that. But if you take it seriously, if your technicians are comfortable and they understand and they have confidence, it's going to basically show in your bottom end 100% of the time. And if they're fearful, and as York says, they're not going to do anything, right? They're basically not going to do what is required, both for their safety, for the customer, and for their employer, and of course, you know, for the equipment manufacturer, you know, from a warranty standpoint and everything else. We all win when technicians are confident, comfortable, and well-trained. It's as simple as that. I mean, 100% from as a manufacturer standpoint, the more the contractor or the technician, you know, again, has confidence, understanding, and skills, it improves everybody's bottom line. It makes our life a lot easier because, again, you know, warranty costs are a big cost of doing business. And if you eliminate a lot of those costs, it helps everybody down the road. I'm on board 100%.
Yeah, 100%. And Jorg, I'll throw that to you and get your thoughts on it. But I just want to throw out there, these, I'm sure a manufacturer, like there's kind of like a divide between manufacturer and technician. I think we need to bring that closer together and streamline it. And what I can see is that manufacturers probably get very frustrated when they receive a big box of TX valves back from technicians saying they had failed and there's nothing wrong with them, right? So, I mean, just give me your thing. Is it training that we need to eliminate all of this? I mean, it sounds simple in concept, but is it that simple?
Yeah.
Basically, yes. It is a lot of training that is but it is training that is needed. And coming back to safety and concerns, there is one point when you have that in mind, then you have covered already a big major part of safety in the field. Whenever you come to a system that is originally charged and designed for a non-flammable refrigerant, the only replacement you put in is another non-flammable refrigerant. You never ever put a flammable refrigerant in a system that was made for non-flammables. Mm-hmm. Never. No matter what, never. You never do that. Full stop. That already gives a big part of safety. And the reason why you never do that.
The guy that comes after you is really what it comes down to, right? Because the person that comes later on to service that, he has no idea what's in there or the danger that it presents to him, right?
So that's one point. And the other point, in case that system has a leak, it was never designed to handle that leak properly. Mm-hmm. So you might have a component sitting there generating a spark exactly at the point where the refrigerant accumulates. Mm-hmm. That's why you never, ever do that, because mm-hmm. that system was never designed with a flammable refrigerant in mind.
Interesting.
That's a major important point.
Yeah. Yeah, this has been a good conversation. All great points. We could talk about this for another 2 hours because, I mean, we're just going down a rabbit hole. Every time we bring up a new sort of subject within the subject, we're going down this rabbit hole. But, I mean, I got to get going myself, but I want to thank you guys for your time today, 100%. That was great.
Thank you. Thank you, Gary.
It was great talking to you. Thank you.
Once again, thank you to Jamie. Thank you to Jorg. This was a really good discussion that I thought was needed. Just getting things off our chest, talking about refrigerants, talking about where the industry is going and flammable refrigerants, how we might have sensors and shut off solenoids and maybe outdoor equipment that only holds flammable refrigerants. And we use water or glycol to be our heat exchange medium. Just some ideas thrown out there. So very interesting. So thank you guys once again. I'm out. Happy HVACing.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Follow HVAC Know-It-All on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn, and anywhere else Gary feels like popping up. This has been a Two Smokes and a Coffee production.